This is the Fast Lane Podcast, powered by I Promise. Now, here's the Fast Lane.
Dan McLaughlin's going to join us right now via the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. Jamie Rivers, Brad Thompson, I'm Anthony Stalter. Danny Mac, how you doing on this Friday?
It's great to have all three of you guys together. That makes me even happier.
Really? We're happy together, too. Yeah. We're like the...
So happy.
Well, now with you
together.
Here, we're the four best friends
that anyone could have.
Hey, Dan.
How you guys doing? I'm doing great.
Yeah,
happy
weekend. We're doing good as well. So, Dan, you are about as big of a baseball fan as I know, and certainly with the passing of Hank Aaron at age 86. Wanted to get your thoughts and your reflections on Hammer and Hank. Players that historic, they always have a different meaning to, you know, depending on what era you grew up in, what era you appreciated watching in baseball, you know, different players mean different things. For you and Hank Aaron and his career, what did it mean to you?
Just he was so much a part of baseball for so long, and the fact that he dates back to the Negro Leagues. He was a shortstop. He played for the Indianapolis Clowns and then makes it to the major leagues. I actually was looking back at the original report of the scouting report of him going to the big leagues, which you can find in Cooperstown. And they talk about, yeah, pretty good athlete, might have a nice career. We'll see how things play out. And, oh, by the way, he winds up hitting, you know, almost 800 home runs. And the thing that's amazing is that if you take away his home runs, and I was talking about it this morning, just wipe clean the home runs away, he still has over 3,000 hits.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. I mean, he was just a tremendous player, and I don't think enough people recognize the all-around great player that he was outside of the home runs. And what he went through leading into breaking Babe Ruth's record is nothing short of remarkable because of the situation in the country, the racial tensions. He had a long off season to think about that, to go through it, to deal with the hate mail, the vitriol, just awfulness of what he dealt with, and the things that you have read about since then, the things you hear about. I remember talking to Milo Hamilton, who is since deceased, but the longtime broadcaster who called that famous home run that night, along with Vin Scully, and he said it was unbelievable what he went through, and no one could fully understand it. We all can talk about it. I can sit there and talk about it, but no one would fully understand it unless you were in his shoes. So anytime I was around him, which was a handful of times when he would pop in a booth or we'd be in Atlanta and there'd be some kind of ceremony and we'd be around him, just like incredible grace, gentleman, wasn't angry, you know, all those things. He was just a wonderful man. And the thing I think about, and I also talked about this this morning, I was listening to MLB Network Radio, and they were doing something on Barry Bonds. And I think it was the year that Bonds broke Aaron's record, and they were kind of going through what that season was like. And if you remember when he broke the record, Hank Aaron comes up on the video board in San Francisco with just a wonderful speech towards Barry Bonds. And I just thought that was, you know, where many people were upset and frustrated and should he be the home run king and all that stuff. And he was great. I mean, just always class. And that's the thing I think about when I think of Hank Aaron.
That's incredibly well said,
Turn
Dan.
Turn on your mic.
That's my fault. Incredibly well said.
I think you probably need to get off your phone is what you need to do.
I wanted to see if your phone was on a little bit ago. It was, turns out. Dan, another thing that strikes me, by the way, with him, we look at power hitters now, and they everybody's enormous. He weighed 180 his whole career. I was listening to him. It was a replay. He was with Dan Patrick a year ago. And he talked about, if I ever got above 180, I felt like I was overweight. Like, it's unreal what he was able to do with just the wrist and the hand power that man had.
You know better than I, but look at his wrists. Like, you know how we think about, Brad, how guys, you know, different stances and how they hit, or are they able to hit the ball with power the other way, how they generate power. Look at his wrists and how he rolls over with the bat, which is something I notice with him. When I look at some of the old video, it's just an incredible player. And the amount of hits that he had per season, it was something like 15 or 16 years in a row that he had over 150 hits. That's just, you know, something you don't see today. And if you did, the guy's getting paid $25 million a year. So in all aspects of the game, he was just phenomenal.
No question. All right. And by the way, all of our Hall of Famers, let's bubble wrap them. Let's get past year, because it has been a rough one, no doubt. Dan, I want to spin it forward to the Cardinals talking about it. I know you were busy as can be this weekend with the virtual winter warm-up. You caught up with all the front office executives. I want to start with your conversation with Mo. You sat down with Mo. You're chopping up next season, the offseason. What was your biggest takeaway from sitting down with John Mozeliak?
That we're going to start the season on time. That the memo came out from Major League Baseball, and one way or another, we're going to start this thing on time. And I guess I'm 100% in. I'm hopeful. I'm still thinking that it's going to happen. They would be reporting on the 17th. And the thing that really struck me was that there's going to be 80 guys in camp from the Mo interview. 80 guys. So when I initially was thinking, you know, a month or two ago, or when we first started the off season, I thought, well, you'd get down there and they're going to have to figure out how they're going to do spring training games, or maybe you curtail them, or you don't have a normal spring training in terms of some of these exhibition games. But he's talking about having 80 guys in camp, because they're talking about having split squads and things of that nature. So you're able to do that, though, at these facilities because of the amount of fields that are at the particular facilities that you go in. So you can get your work in, but just the amount of people that you would have down there, I think it's a huge undertaking. But the amount of players that they would have, 80, that's an awful lot.
That's crazy. Are they going to have to? I don't know if he got into this at all, or if when you've caught up with Shilty, if he's got into it. But I think about that many players, and I think about having to stagger workouts, even with all the fields, with that many guys. I'm assuming you're going to have to almost double your staff, or at least they'll be doubling their hours. Like, the coaches are going to be in for the long haul on this one.
I would think, and I haven't heard this, Brad, but, I mean, you know it. You've been down there. The actual building of where they, you know, guys dress and shower and get the training work done with the trainers to, you know, if they've got a nick or whatever, that's not a big building. So that part of it, I think, would be maybe complicated for them. The actual getting the work in on the fields, I don't think is going to be nearly as tough, just because the fields are spread out and you can spread out on a baseball field. So I think the actual time at the complex is going to be something that gets complicated.
Dan McLaughlin is our guest here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Dan, I think I'm contractually obligated to ask you about Yadier Molina until he signs someplace. With the catchers, it looks like the options are dwindling. We were going over the teams that might be interested in Yadier, and it comes down to, you know, obviously he wants a team that he's going to be competitive with. We don't know about if he is seeking that second year. We think he is.
Play every day, Anthony.
Play every day. I mean, there's just a lot going on. What if it's not St. Louis, Dan? Where do you think that Yadier winds up at this point, now that we know that the catching situation's kind of taking shape around baseball?
Well, I think it's the usual suspects, and you guys have probably gone through those. So I don't know if I need to repeat those, but I will say this. I would say the things that I took out of the winter warm-up concerning those guys, and it's Waino too, is that Bill DeWitt Jr., the Cardinal owner, said, hey, we've offered them. And that was the first I had heard of that, you know, apparently there's been an official offer made to them. Now, I don't know what that means in terms of money and years, but hey, the offer has been there, and apparently if they want to take it, it's there. And if not, you know, maybe they look somewhere else, or they negotiate and they continue to negotiate. I think the dominoes need to fall with Real Muto, and then those teams say, okay, option B and C and D or whatever is maybe part of it is Yadi. I think what's really interesting is Jason Castro. Now, he got a two-year deal for about $7 million. He is in his 30s. He's not 38, but he's got comparable looks at ahead of 2021 that Yadi may have. And so maybe the question becomes, is that your benchmark? And then the question for the Cardinals is, all right, that's the benchmark. That's the money he got. And now what do we want to pay for legacy? And that's something that I think maybe comes into play here.
Danny, I've come to terms here lately that the Cardinals are probably not really going to do anything. And you know what? I'm kind of okay with it. Now, when I say they're not going to do anything, I mean, look, I'd love to see Yadi come back and Waino, and I'd love to see something, maybe a minor upgrade in some areas. But with your discussions with everybody that you've had during the winter warm-up, have the Cardinals discussed any or mentioned any players that they would like to circle around, even lower-scale guys, maybe some insurance policies that might end up on that 80-man group that goes down to spring training?
I have not heard particular names. Now, I think one of the things, though, that we all can kind of look at is they would not say this, but, you know, I think we all can look at this, is that it might be a transition year for the club. So you figure out your outfield situation. You know you're going to be pretty good in terms of what you have defensively, even minus Wong. You know that you're going to be really good probably with pitching. And that's one of the things, more so than like the individuals and say, hey, we need to go get this guy. I think they feel really good about their pitching because – and it was something that was stressed to me over the weekend. It's something I've been talking about, and I'm hearing more and more around it in the game. If we're going to have a whole 162, and Brad, you know about this. I mean, imagine taking the amount of time off that these guys have taken off from a pitching perspective last year and then having to amp it up and then only get 60 games in. I just think organizations are going to have to be really careful with their pitching. So depth is going to be something of a strength for the Cardinals, and it could play out in a big, big way. And maybe that's why they say, you know, we can upgrade our offense a little bit because they're going to need to. The offense, there's no doubt about it. It's got to be better. But our strength is with our pitching, and we really like it. And, you know, if you look at what they have coming off the books financially this year and even next year, it's something like committed salaries are like around $60, $65 million after this year. So if they're not going to spend the kind of money that maybe fans want to see this year, I would anticipate that you might see them get more aggressive next year because you would like to think that we're back to normalcy and full stands and it's back to, you know, okay, business as usual. So I'm not necessarily sure they're going to go out and do that this year. There may be upgrades, and I do think they're going to do something before opening day. It's just, you know, time will tell.
Going back to the idea of upgrading the offense a little bit, and by the way, I wholeheartedly agree with the depth of the pitching staff. That's going to be their strength. It has been in the past, but they'll lean on it even more this year. The one thing I keep coming back to, like, there are going to be some guys, Dan, because you mentioned normalcy in another year. There are going to be some guys that are going to say, all right, well, you know what? Forget it. And normally, I would get myself a 3-4 year deal here. Let's reset the market. I'm going to sign a 1-year deal. I'm going to regain my value. Everything's going to be good to go, and I'll move on from there. And maybe that's a Jock Peterson, or maybe that's Eddie Rosario. Like, you know, pick whoever you want. I picked a couple of guys that the Cardinals could definitely use as a platoon split in the outfield. But I wonder if those guys, when you look at how this ballpark plays, is it a tough place to say, hey, come here and regain your value? Like, I wonder if that's going to be something that the Cardinals will have to fight against.
And I don't know if they want to do that. I mean, for instance, if you're talking about, because every day that goes by with certain guys in the final year of their deal, it becomes a little bit easier to say, if you're not performing, we're not going to play you because you may not have them after this year. So an example would be like Dexter Fowler. I was doing some numbers here. As a Cardinal, he is 20% below the league average offensively against lefties. So maybe one of the things that you do is that if you have that lefty on the mound and you've got this young group of outfielders that you want to see play, maybe Fowler is one of the guys that you platoon, and you better play Harrison Bader against those lefties because he crushes left-handed pitching. And that's something that you got to think about. Now, when you have right-handed pitching, you know, Bader's OPS against right-handed pitching is .669. That's 17% against the league average against right-handed pitching. You know, those are kind of things that I think if I'm Mike Shildt, and if this is the way it's currently constructed with the guys that you have, and I understand what you're going with, Brad. I mean, it's a big ballpark, and it plays fair, and may even play to pitchers even more so than hitters, but that's the way that maybe he has to look at his lineup this year. And he might have a little bit more leeway to do that with guys in the final years of their contracts.
Dan, great stuff as always. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Thanks. And make sure you keep those phones off during the show.
Yeah, be first. That's what friends do. They check on each other.
Well, I appreciate that. I would just like to see it done in a professional manner.
Yeah.
And that means you, Brad.
I'll call you in a minute.
Thanks, buddy.
See you, Dan. That's Dan McLaughlin here in the Fastlane on 101 ESPN. More on the passing of Hank Aaron, the life of Hank Aaron, the career of Hank Aaron next in What's Trending.
You've been listening to the Fastlane Podcast, powered by iPromise.